sit in my b-boy stance with flip-flops and socks and sweatpants. I'm finna enhance your brain. Check it out. Once upon a time, not long ago, when the plague from the point didn't have no flow, a nigga hit me from my tennis shoes, walking to the store, caught a plague slipping, but now I lay it to the flow just like Harvin, cause I got the heat in my baby mama name, nah, never bragging just to say not even.
Welcome everybody to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the NFL for sportsonearth.com, thecomeback.com, and I cover the Cleveland Browns for the Orange and Brown Report. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian.
Hey, what's up?
Ugh. A lot of breaking news around the league the past couple of days, so we have
breaking news, such as bones
it's
breaking.
It's too early to make that joke. That is not appropriate.
I
mainly do not endorse the sense of humor by my co-host
That wasn't even like any sort of joke to offend that, or it wasn't meant to be disparaging.
Calling it a too soon situation. But yes, there's lots to talk about around the league. Obviously, week three of the preseason just wrapped, which means all 32 teams have just one game remaining, all of which will be played on Thursday.
By a bunch of guys that most likely will be cut.
Probably. Aside from the guys who end up on the practice squad. Mm-hmm. Teams, of course, reducing their rosters this week. As of today, down to 75 players. And on Saturday, down to 53. Sunday, they can establish their practice squads. So, obviously, we've seen a lot of player movement the last couple of days. Guys getting placed on injured reserve with return designation, guys starting the season out on physically unable to perform lists. But we're gonna focus here on three of the bigger stories that have come out around the league over the past week or so, all of which involve quarterbacks. Let's start with...
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Most newsworthy stuff is quarterbacks.
And not always is, but I mean, there's some other newsworthy stuff. Joey Bosa ended the holdout with the San Diego Chargers, and now the number three overall pick is finally signed. Chief safety Eric Berry ended his holdout. He's reported to the team. He signed his franchise tag. So there are other stories around the league involving positions that aren't quarterback. But for right now, this trio of stories are definitely the biggest.
And
they just happen to involve quarterbacks. We'll start with the most recent first. Today, Tuesday, in practice, Minnesota Vikings quarterback Teddy Bridgewater went down with widely reported as a very nasty non-contact left knee injury. There's numerous media reports talking about his knee was flailing in the air, which is not a thing your knee should do.
That's not a good adjective
that
for your
players
knee.
players who caught sight of whatever Bridgewater is dealing with were vomiting on the field and were straight up freaked out. He is still being evaluated. He was immediately put in an air cast and then ambulanced to a local hospital where he was undergoing an MRI under sedation, according to Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer. Zimmer definitely shaken up by Teddy Bridgewater's injury here. He says it doesn't look good in terms of his chances to play this year. And depending on the severity of this injury, I mean, this could really affect the remainder of Bridgewater's NFL career. But, at this point, focus on the health, the injury, and rehabbing, of course, once we get to that point.
That was my initial reaction when I just heard bad knee injury ambulance. I was thinking, at that point, it's like this year, whatever. If he comes back, great. I mean? But it's not even about this year. How does this jeopardize his future?
From what this sounds like, and again, we don't have any official word yet of exactly what the extent of the injury is, except that we know that it's significant. It's going to be a long and difficult recovery for a guy who's just so beloved, not just by his teammates and coaches in Minnesota, but people all around the league, people in the media. This isn't like a Tony Romo situation where you have a bunch of social media morons go, well, what do you expect? It's Tony Romo. Like, it's not,
right,
it's not like that.
Right.
Everybody's kind of shaken up about it. And clearly it's going to affect the Vikings' win-loss situation for the 2016 season. Of course, the Vikings were the NFC North champions last year with 11-5 record. But I will say this to Bridgewater fans, Vikings fans who might be listening, not all hope is lost, whether it ends up being Sean Hill or somebody else under center this season. Because frankly put, the passing game is a supplement to the other two things that the Vikings really do best.
Sure.
Defense and the run game. The Vikings attempted the fewest passing attempts in the league last year at 454. They ranked 31st in passing yards, 31st in passing touchdowns. Meanwhile, their run game ranked 4th in attempts, yards, touchdowns, and yards per attempt, while the defense ranked 5th in points allowed and 13th in yards. So if the run game and the defense can continue to play to the level that they did last year, I'm not going to sit around and say that the Vikings are cooked right now.
No, I mean, the problem is that, you know, even though they were focused on running and defense, you know, the threat of the pass helps the run game, obviously. So if assuming Sean Hill is going to be your guy, you know, again, regardless of what the actual situation, we're certainly speculating here because this just happened.
Right. I mean, Sean Hill is the number two on the depth chart right now, but there are other quarterbacks that the Vikings could certainly pick up or, you know, inquire about.
Right.
Josh McCown in Cleveland.
Sure.
What might happen with Mark Sanchez in Denver.
Exactly.
So there are options that are going to become even more available in the coming days when, you know, rosters get trimmed down even further.
But just for the purpose of this discussion, assuming Sean Hill is your starter day one, you know, that it's obviously and I love Sean Hill. Sean Hill's like my favorite backup quarterback. He's been around forever, and he's just like he comes in and he performs solidly, which is everything you should ever want for your backup. But the problem is when he's forced to start long term, obviously there's a reason he's been a long term backup, and that's that he's limited in what he can do, you know, and
right.
he's just not, he's not that kind of guy. So it just takes a lot out of your how the it makes it easier for defenses to scheme against you when there's less to prepare for from the passing game.
Well, I mean, there wasn't much to prepare for.
True.
From the passing game last year. I mean, they combined with 454 passing attempts, again 32nd in the league, and you know, only three other teams ran more often than they did.
Very
so,
true.
Defenses were already assuming last year with a 16-game healthy Teddy Bridgewater that this was going to be a run-heavy defense-first kind of team.
Well, and they're still going to prepare that way, but they're also going to prepare for a less dynamic quarterback. And when I say dynamic, I'm mainly talking about I think he's got a better arm and he's much more escapable than
sure.
Sean Hill.
And also, you know, and I think a lot of people within the Vikings organization and around the NFL really thought that this year, the third year for Teddy Bridgewater, he's really going to take a big leap. You know, he's improved over the past two seasons and, you know, in limited, limited performance in the preseason here, he's done really well, completing 18 of 23 passes, 253 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, 5 passes of 20 or more yards, 78.3 completion percentage, and a 141.5 rating. So it has been a really good preseason for him. Whether or not that was going to mean anything in the regular season, only because we're talking vanilla offenses versus vanilla defenses and trying to keep people protected and safe as well as they can in these situations. But at the same time, it is whoever it's going to be, whether it's Sean Hill, Mark Sanchez, TBD, we don't know. It's obviously a downgrade.
Sure.
There's a downgrade when you go from a starter to a backup, no matter how high volume your passing offense is or isn't in the Vikings.
You're right.
Case.
And to expand on what you're saying earlier, it's like I'm not ready to write off Minnesota this season, but at the same time, obviously, you must downgrade your expectations.
Right. You know, I was looking at some odds and some stats earlier today when I was getting ready to write my article on Teddy Bridgewater. And basically, they were projected to win 9 games this year with Bridgewater, but now that drops to 7.5 without him. And their Super Bowl, their chances of reaching, not just even winning, but reaching the Super Bowl have dropped to about 1.3%.
Yeah, well.
And that makes sense. I mean, you're losing your starting quarterback.
Sure.
But at the same time, I think the level of freak out would be the same if we're talking about another significant knee injury to Adrian Peterson rather than an injury to Teddy Bridgewater, because he is also so important to that offense. And while Jerick McKinnon and Matt Asiata are still going to be a major part of the run game, even more so now with whatever this quarterback situation is, it's almost like it's the same kind of impact. You're losing Bridgewater, you're losing
Sure, for Adrian this, Peterson. For as far as this season's concerned, yeah. Absolutely.
And there's
I
also the intangible factor to consider because, you know, Teddy Bridgewater's the heart of this team. They
right.
rally around him. They love him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, on the one hand, oh, you know, maybe they'll be out there doing it for Teddy this year, and they surprise some people with the number of wins they can put together. But on the other hand, you don't have that aspect, that intangible that his personality brings onto the field,
in the
huddle. And
he can, because that's the thing, is he can be on the sidelines and doing his rah-rah in there.
Oh, of course.
But, like, it's not the same as when he's on the field.
Right.
And so you're losing that.
You're definitely losing intangibles.
Yeah. So hopefully it's just a bad injury that he can, you know,
the
recover.
Next step is bounce back and recover and have,
yeah.
have a normal leg that he can –
yeah,
you know,
hopefully that's the
it's
case.
Not this long protracted thing or something like happened like last preseason to former Steelers kicker Sean Sweezum, where it's just one injury and that's a career.
Right.
Because that would be heartbreaking to
yes.
see for a guy like Teddy
Bridgewater.
Well,
especially just he's scratching the surface. He seems like one of the greatest guys, and just yeah, it'd be terrible if it's anything long term or career ending, but we'll have to see.
Another quarterback who, in my opinion, whose career does hang in the balance at this point is Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo. He finally made his preseason debut in week 3. We hadn't seen him on the field until his premature return from a collarbone fracture led to another collarbone fracture last Thanksgiving. And unfortunately, he's just snake bitten right now because it was, the third play of the game? He got tackled awkwardly by, Cliff Averill, and
mm-hmm.
now he has a compression fracture in his vertebrae in his spine, and he's projected to miss at least half of the season. Again, there is a silver lining at play here. Dak Prescott, he's been excellent throughout the preseason. He's had time working with that first-team offense and has built some rhythm and chemistry with them. It'll be interesting to see how the rookie does when you're talking about full-on regular season game action, but he seems at the very least calm and collected in the pocket and things like that that are you know, give you a mental edge when you're a rookie over a guy who's kind of overwhelmed and freaking out back there. But at the same time, you know, Cowboys have been waiting and you know, Romo spends his off season, gets the collarbone reinforced with a metal plate, you know, he's ready to go out there and finally have a chance to lead the Cowboys to potentially a Super Bowl, and it's yet another major injury situation for a quarterback who's had, I mean, this is his third major back injury. He's had the three collarbone fractures. He's obviously not getting any younger, and Dak Prescott's been really explosive and impressive so far. Do you think Tony Romo could get, for all intents and purposes here, Drew Bledsoe'd by Dak?
Yeah, probably. But beyond that, I'd say that, you know, how do I say this without sounding insensitive? It might be time for Romo to head for the hills.
I think now at this point, especially when you're talking about another fracture in your back.
I feel like the last couple years, the Cowboys have been trying to keep Romo on the field, and Romo wants to stay on the field because he's a gamer, and
of course,
and he's not done, you know. But at the same time, I feel like because they had no other option at quarterback, like everybody wanted him to continue to be the man, and everybody was trying to keep it around that party because it's been that way for 8 years or whatever. So they didn't want to change, you know. They didn't want to even think about going in a different direction. Let's just get him back and blah, blah, blah. Stem the tide until we can get him back. But, like, I don't know. There's just the with multiple collarbones and backs and all this stuff happening, a lot of it over the last three, four years.
I think Romo needs to start thinking about how he's going to feel when he's 50, 55 years old
yeah.
at this point.
I mean, it's just there comes a time, and it's different for everybody, you know. Like, Peyton and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady are similar ages, but, like, obviously it's different for them. They're different people. They've had different experiences and their bodies are different. So, you know, Tom Brady's still going and Peyton isn't. I mean, Peyton was in the league, I think, a year or two before, but still, and I think he's maybe a year older, but still, you know, it's the idea that, you know, Favre could play till he was 41
Every
or whatever.
Every guy's different.
Some guys are done by the time they're 32. It's different. And I mean, for the Cowboys, the fact that this happened on the heels of Dak showing in this preseason to the point where, like, on the last podcast we had, we were saying, boy, at least they're not, you know, everybody's saying coming into the preseason, what are they going to do for a backup?
Right.
And nobody was even mentioning Dak. Well, he showed, and everybody stopped talking about what they're going to do for a backup in case Romo. And in case Romo happened, now that Dak's there. So, of course, they're back looking for another backup, I think. But still, it's for that organization, this guy has been a question mark for the last 3 or 4 years.
Right.
Because of this health situation.
But when he's healthy, he's
been
amazing.
He's been doing his thing. There's,
we all know
exactly.
about how great Tony Romo is
exactly.
when he's on the
field
out there.
But that's been a cloud hanging over the Cowboys for the last few years is the if Romo stays healthy, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
You know, and so the fact that Dak showed and whether or not, you know, I'm not even saying, obviously we've still only seen him in some preseason action. We haven't seen him play a regular season game yet, and he seems to be already anointed as the guy for the future.
Sure.
And I don't even know if that's the case, but at least he's someone for this year. And, you know, we'll see. And if he is the guy for the future, maybe this is a good thing for him to get just thrust into this and really get – as I've advocated on this podcast a number of times, I don't necessarily think that every rookie should just get shoved in – quarterback-wise, should get shoved in
sure.
to learn by fire.
Because I agree.
I think it works for some guys, and I think it doesn't work for some guys.
Yep,
Dak looks like he's ready to take that challenge, and the experience of starting as a rookie could and should help him based on what I've seen so far,
right.
just for the fact that he looks closer to being able to do it than such – for example, Jared Goff. We look at Jared Goff. We see some of the reasons that why what he's done in this preseason.
Right.
We see some of the reason why everybody was into this guy. But at the same time,
you also see very clearly.
He looks like he's a 21-year-old kid.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what he's doing out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And where Dak looks like he's a lot closer to having it together as far as what he needs to do
right.
during the games. So I think it should be good for him, assuming he continues on this small trajectory we've seen so far. I mean, it could be that the Cowboys finally have their answer for post-Romo. And,
right.
And it's been a question for a while.
But the question is when post-Romo? Because this year, and the other question is what happens after week 8? What happens when Romo's ready to come back in? Tony Romo's making $20.8 million this year. That goes up to $24.7 next year and $25.2 in 2018. Okay? Now, let's say Dak plays well, but he's not the $20.8 million guy. If Romo's healthy week 9, week 10, what are they going to do? Further, if Dak really proves that he's the guy and kind of, you know, they decide to preserve Romo for the remainder of the season, that they feel confident that Dak can do all 16 games, you can't just cut Tony Romo without consequence in 2017. That's $19.6 million in dead money for Romo alone. But if you feel really good about Dak being your quarterback of the future, you're not going to have a $24.7 million guy on the bench.
Right.
So there's a lot potentially riding on the future of the Cowboys, on Dak's future, on Romo's future. Just what happens in these first 8 games
sure.
could really open up a big can of worms, a lot of questions that are going to have to be answered. So I'm really curious to see where this goes, because when, you know, if Dak plays really, really well, the Cowboys have a decision to make. I mean, the only decision I think that would make sense if that situation would play out is finding a trade partner for Romo who wants to pay him that $24.7 million, or they, you know, trade and restructure or something like that, trade and renegotiate. Because you're not going to eat $19.6 million in dead money on one guy.
No, I mean, I get that perspective. I'd say a lot of it, you know,
there's a lot of what ifs. It hinges on a bunch of ifs that we don't have the answers
to. And like
we
I said, and I think the direction or what actually happens will kind of depend on a lot of these what ifs, how they actually resolve.
Right.
Such as, you know, how does Dak look in the first 8 weeks? Does he kind of come back to earth a little bit from this?
Yeah,
you know,
once he's facing real full scheme
for 60 minutes and all that.
Defenses,
you know,
is
there going to be a comeback to earth, and he looks a little bit more like a rookie as people would expect a rookie to look, at least.
Right.
Or is he continue with this and he's just really out there gangbusters, you know, killing it? Or is it like kind of borderline? Is it like he looks like sometimes, but and sometimes he looks like a rookie, sometimes he looks great. And where is where is Dallas at this point once Roma's ready to come back?
Yeah, what's the win loss record look like? What does the NFC East look like?
Are they in the playoff picture? That's what I'm saying. Is if they're leading the East and Dak's looking really good, if they're leading the East but Dak's like looking kind of good but kind of rookie, you know what I mean? I'd say that maybe you keep him in there to preserve Romo, but if it's getting to the point where you have a lot riding on this season, and
you don't know if Dak can do it,
or let's say even get to the playoffs or something like that. You know, maybe at that point you bring Romo in.
Right, sort of like the situation with Brock Osweiler. Like
exactly, that's kind of where I was thinking with that.
Once really the stakes were really high,
they put Manning back in. Frankly, regardless of how well Brock Osweiler played last year during his time,
that's the smart move. It's Peyton Manning.
And how bad Peyton played during his time in the season, you got to the playoffs, and you know that like Peyton was a big reason that they won the Super Bowl. So
yes.
Even though obviously the defense I think was the biggest reason, but Peyton was a big reason. So,
and not just when the Super Bowl got there, to be
right, right, exactly.
And finally, a topic that's been discussed to death, but we would be remiss if we don't chime in here, the F-Ball NFL podcast, on it for a few minutes. San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick did not stand. He sat for the national anthem during the third preseason game, and he gave a very detailed, thorough reasoned response as to why he did so. His personal silent protest against the way that people of color in the United States are treated, especially institutionally, especially by the police. And we know about how this has been just a vicious political issue and a vicious political cycle in general, and that this country is more openly divided than it has been in a really long time. So naturally, it sparked significant controversy. People took umbrage to it. They didn't like the way that he chose to go about his protest because they felt it was disrespectful to the country, to the veterans, to the flag.
Current military, all
current
that.
Current military and all of that. But the thing is, the national anthem is just a song. The song is not the military. And freedom, the freedoms that we have that everybody's, you have free, they fight to protect you and you're disrespecting them. But what they're protecting is his right to do things like sit down during the national anthem to make a political point.
Right.
And what really bugs me about this whole thing is that everybody is talking about Kaepernick and patriotism when they're not talking about the reason why Kaepernick did this protest in the first place, which is racism. Which is alive and well and very, very apparent in this country, and something that Kaepernick personally has experienced.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing drives me crazy. It's brought out so many social media racists.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point over the weekend where it's just there was just don't even open Twitter. Don't even bother. Don't listen to sports talk radio. Everything is just reactions, hot takes, bad politics,
and
blindness.
People being
ignorance.
Upset and
people being upset about the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I think that Colin Kaepernick, I think any player who wants to figure out his own personal way to protest something that he feels politically important to him should be able to do that, whether it's sitting during the anthem. Muhammad Ali was blacklisted in this country for decades because he was pro-black, anti-Vietnam mm-hmm. War. I don't see why athletes need to stick to sports. I don't understand why just because you're an athlete, you're no longer a political being when every human in this world is inherently a political being.
We all deal with politics.
And we all deal with politics. We're all affected by politics. We're all affected by political and social and economic issues that all intertwine, especially when you're discussing race in America. So I think he has every right to do that. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think that people who disagree have a right to express their disagreement. It's just disagree intelligently and know what you're disagreeing with and don't be a jerk. Because Kaepernick's not being a jerk. He's giving reasoned explanation for why he did mm-hmm. what he did. He did what he did, and he didn't make a spectacle out of it. Everybody else made the spectacle
right,
out of it.
Exactly.
It was his own personal silence. Because
this was the third week in a row he did that.
Exactly, and nobody noticed the first mm-hmm. two times. So this was his own personal thing that he wants to do, and I support any. I mean, we've seen it with in the NBA with LeBron James in WNBA. You know, we've seen it with you know on field. You know, I can't breathe T-shirts during, you know, like pregame practices and stuff like that. Do it. These things are real issues in this country that are not being that are not being properly addressed. They're not being properly solved. If you're affected by it or it bothers you, express it. I have zero issue with Kaepernick.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there should be zero issue. If you have an issue with the fact that he was speaking his mind and exercising his First Amendment, I don't want to talk to you because that's absurd.
Right.
And if you think him exercising his First Amendment rights was unpatriotic, then you're missing
you're
the
so
boat
confused.
Here. You're missing the boat here.
He's
yeah,
so
exactly.
Confused.
Now, as far as what his motivation was, the idea that he's protesting to exercise his thoughts on, you know, the racial inequality and everything that is wrapped up in beyond even, well, I mean, I guess basically everything is wrapped up in the Black Lives Matter movement and all of that. I don't think there should be any question about that is not a problem. If you think there's a problem with Black Lives Matter, again, I don't really want to talk to you about it because you're missing the boat. If
yes.
you think they're racist, you have not educated yourself enough.
Yes.
So just look into it more, please.
Yes.
Have an open mind with all this stuff.
Yes,
okay?
Of course. Absolutely.
Instead
education,
of just assuming
man.
What everybody wants. But regardless. So with those two things aside, I think what's interesting about the most interesting thing about what has gone on here is the discussion of is he doing this the right way? Because you hear lots of people
oh, yes,
say,
is he doing this the right way?
I agree with
what other
his
way?
Right to protest, but I don't think that this was the right way to do it.
Those people never come up with any other suggestions for what he should do either, by the way.
That's definitely a fair point is, well, what is the right way? Now, I'm actually kind of on the fence with this because, I mean, again, I don't have an issue that the guy wants to protest. You know, you're stand up for what you believe in. Do that, you know. Whether this was the right medium, I see good things, good reasons why he should and reasons why he shouldn't have done it this way. A reason why he should is if you're protesting something, the idea is to raise awareness or get people talking about it more.
Sure.
And obviously, until this was brought to light, he was doing it and nobody was even talking about it. You know
right.
what I mean? But once it was brought to light, it's a firestorm and everybody's talking about it. So
right.
it definitely brought a spotlight to what he was doing. What he was doing was trying to protest, and that protest was successful, at least in getting everybody talking about this. The problem is that they're not really talking about the right thing.
No, they're talking about Kaepernick and standing and the national anthem. They're not talking about the reason why he was sitting.
Exactly. About racial inequality and all that goes with that.
Right.
So the other thought I have, though, is also like
well, it's more comfortable to question a guy's patriotism than it is comfortable to
True.
Talk about race in this country.
But the thing is that you know that.
So no wonder people are
if he's protesting against racial inequality and all that, and his decision is to protest by not standing during the national anthem. What you're doing is you're going to alienate a lot of people that he kind of caused a lot of this backlash by doing it this way, because you're getting a lot of these people that, regardless of what they actually think about Black Lives Matter,
they're going to have knee-jerk reactions about patriotism
exactly.
and the flag
exactly.
and the national
anthem.
Exactly,
and they're going to, these people that are missing the point, they were bound to miss the point because they can't see past your disrespect for the flag.
Your quote-unquote disrespect.
Your disrespect for the veterans.
Your assumed disrespect.
Even though he came right out and said, like, I have the greatest respect for veterans.
And this
I
has
have
nothing to do with
veterans
that.
Family.
This has
That's
nothing to do with the military.
But people will always look at it that way. When you're doing something against the national anthem or the flag. Again, we could have a whole other discussion about how everybody
symbols
is so
patriotism
wrapped
and,
up into
and,
these symbols. And I get it on both sides.
Flag with military.
I get it on both sides. The national anthem is a song. The flag is some cloth. But For veterans and people that have been in those things, it means something completely different to them. And by him choosing to protest in this way, he is kind of slapping those people in the face, even though he doesn't intend to do that.
No, but
so
but
his
that
intentions
they feel,
aside,
but that they feel slapped shouldn't be something that keeps Kaepernick from expressing
no,
his political opinions.
And again, like I said, I don't. Do I think he? Do I agree with him protesting? Of course. Do I agree with why he's protesting? Of course. Do I agree with the way he did it? I don't know, because I don't know that it was, even though it got a lot of talk, it got a lot of the wrong talk. So how effective was this protest,
right.
You know?
Right.
And, but then the question
is,
how are you going to do it, though?
Yeah.
How are you going to protest in a way that gets everybody talking and actually tries to move the whole thing forward? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. And he obviously doesn't know anything other than this was his idea to go this route with it. And it definitely got a lot of reaction. And there's plenty of people that are in his corner with this.
Yeah.
So,
and he's actually taking a risk with his career, too, because the NFL has no – they're not interested in outspoken, independent thought and political behavior out of
that,
its players.
By the way, that just brought up to one of the most infuriating things I've been reading from just average Joe sports guy out there that's commenting on this whole deal, is these people that are claiming that he's doing this to – keep himself from getting cut. That this is all about his self-interest here, because he was going to get cut anyway. But now he's putting himself in the spotlight. Like, and I'm just like,
no.
How are you missing
the
point
opposite.
This far? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look at Eugene Monroe.
Right. He's in this situation where he might get cut. So
yeah.
If he throws himself out there on a ledge like this, they're going to just shove him right off. I mean,
right? And he knows this, and he doesn't care
exactly.
Because he thinks this
it's important enough.
This
to
is
him.
Important enough to him, and so
and
I
think that shows courage to
absolutely
to stand up in a way that could really negatively affect you going forward
in your
life
and just not care because this matters more.
Because
I think that's great.
Absolutely, it's great, and he
and
should
that's
stand
an American
up for that.
Thing to do. That's a patriotic
yep.
thing to do.
Absolutely.
And if anybody who says otherwise, don't at me. Just leave me alone. We're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. We're going to come back and talk some football. We're going to continue on with a little bit of divisional preview talk. We're going to be talking about the NFC North, which we have seen undergo a significant change in the past couple of hours. And we'll also be talking about the AFC East, which has a kind of a new look for its top team as well. So we'll be right back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. And we are back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, talking now about the couple of divisions in the league. We're almost close to wrapping up our previews. I think we'll be able to get in the last three divisions next week's episode right before the start of the regular season. This week, we're talking about the NFC North, and then we'll move over to the AFC East. But the NFC North, might as well start with the Minnesota Vikings. We talked at length about what we're kind of expecting
sure.
Now that Teddy Bridgewater is likely done for the season with that significant left knee injury. It's such a bummer. I mean, this is a team that, you know, really got it together, 11-5 last year. And
they got their brand new stadium.
They have this brand new stadium. It's supposed to be
Which
a great year for
it
Teddy.
It was beautiful, by the way, watching that game there the
it
other
was.
Day.
It was. It's actually
they
very
got that nice sky
stadium.
Roof or the skylight type roof, and it a lot of natural light on the field. It looks really cool there.
It looks really cool in there. You know, this is an 11-win team last year. Even with the fact that, of course, they have that strong run game, that strong defense, and that they're going to have to lean even more on both of those areas this year. I just don't see the 11-win thing happening at this point. I'm curious to see what what quarterback emerges taking over the starting job, if it is going to indeed be Sean Hill or somebody else. And that's just something we're going to have to keep an eye on over the next week or so.
Yeah, I mean, we're not necessarily making predictions here with the
right.
these discussions, so we're just kind of talking about what we see. But obviously expectations are downgraded
mm-hmm.
Because of today's development. And but, you know, they're still a pretty strong team. They've built a very what you would expect out of Zimmer, very very solid defense
right.
since he's come aboard. And, you know, that running game still has Adrian Peterson, who's a freak of nature.
Yeah, I mean, he might be a year older, but, like, don't tell him that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing is every time you want to hit something's happened where you want to compare him to mortal running backs. You know, he just defies all of that. So,
right.
You know, should you expect him to fall off? I mean, again, mortal running back, sure, after the 30, you know, but with this guy, who knows?
Yeah. You know, moving on to the Green Bay Packers, I think this is a team definitely trending upward. Last year, definitely not the season they expected, especially when you're talking about a team that is constantly, every year since Aaron Rodgers has taken over at quarterback, essentially, has constantly been in that Super Bowl conversation, mm-hmm. especially, you know, at the start of the season, and it hasn't really panned out that way, especially last year. But he's got Jordy Nelson back, which is going to be huge for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's definitely a preferred target of his. And Eddie Lacy, you know, he's running really well. I mean, that guy might not be the most svelte or built running back, but he has lost some weight. He's changed his diet up. And,
not eating so much China food.
Yeah, China food. So I, you know, I think that, you know, this is going to be an explosive offense yet again. And then there's the question marks on defense that just seem to be hanging around there a lot of times. And you know, we're still kind of pending whatever outcome might come from the NFL about this Al Jazeera PED crap. I'm going to call it crap because it's complete crap.
Of course.
But it does involve two Packers linebackers who are very key to their pass rush, Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews. And if something were to actually come out of this, which I don't anticipate, that would certainly have a negative impact on the Green Bay defense. But I don't see anything coming out of that because, again, it's crap.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny how this division looks kind of similar to last year in that going into the season, you kind of have Green Bay and Minnesota towards what you think is the top of the division and Detroit and Chicago in the other end. And, you know, Minnesota went through and won last year. So, you know, there was definitely still a lot of those expectations. Now with Teddy's injury, you know, I'd say that maybe you take them down a peg. Green Bay is probably now the favorite to take this division, and but I still think Minnesota is going to be solid, so they'll be right there. But yeah, Green Bay definitely they're the favorites to take this division now, because we'll talk about these other two teams in a minute. And but there's some surprising things that we or some interesting things that we've seen out of Green Bay so far this preseason. Guys like Jared Cook's there now, and he's been looking like he could be a nice weapon for Rodgers.
Absolutely.
Obviously, a big part of the Packers' issues last year had to do with Jordy getting hurt, you know, in the preseason, and it was just kind of a different offense for them to figure out throughout the year. So, you know, I'm assuming we can expect to see, you know, the Packers kind of back to where they were 2 years ago or that sort of thing. I'd say it'd be somewhat of a surprise if they didn't look as good as they did a couple years ago. And it'd be somewhat of a surprise if they didn't win the division, especially now. So
moving on to the Detroit Lions, a couple of things of note there, of course, the retirement of Calvin Johnson, leading the Lions to kind of retool how they handle their passing offense. They bring in, you know, Marvin Jones, former Cincinnati Bengal, and you know, increasing the speed of the offense and spreading the ball around and getting the ball out of Matthew Stafford's hands more quickly and trying to confuse defenses by the multiple passing options that he's expected to have this year. I'm not worried about no Megatron. I'm worried about no pass rush.
Their defensive line, honestly, is one of the better parts of this team, and I think it should be a bigger year for Ziggy. Ziggy Ansah should be, you know, showing a bit. There's definitely some depth on that line. Their defensive issues are really come down the linebackers they've got, you know, DeAndre Levy, who you've hardly seen the last couple of years, Kyle Van Noy, who they drafted high a couple of years ago, but he's been hurt and we haven't seen him do anything yet, and they promoted Tahir Whitehead after they decided to not retain Stephen Tulloch. So
didn't Tahir Whitehead just get banged up in the preseason?
And then he got banged up. I don't know how bad that is. Pardon me for not knowing that. but yeah, the secondary, there's some ifs. You know, there's some guys that look like they're pretty good, and there's some guys
that's been a long-standing issue
exactly. But the fact that they have a couple guys that they feel good about it, I think that's actually new for Detroit over the last two decades. I don't know. And yeah, the defense is really a question. The offense, the question on the offense really comes down to the offensive line. And because I mean, yeah, Calvin's gone, but I don't think it's gonna. I don't think that's. I think lazy analysis says Calvin's gone. They're not going to be as good on offense. And granted, he's probably a future Hall of Famer. I mean, that's probably going to be hard to deny. And you know, you take that away from your offense, of course,
there's going to be an effect.
And they had so much of their offense run through him for the entire time he was here. You know, of course, or there. Sorry, I'm in Chicago, not Detroit. Well, the entire time he was there, you know, so much of the offense went through him. Of course, that makes sense. But at the same time, you know, Marvin Jones has looked very solid, and
he really has.
And he can. I think I said this to you the other day. Calvin was amazing because he was so big and fast and could jump, and he could basically do every different thing receivers can do well.
Right.
But I think that they can make up for that somewhat, at least, by having Marvin Jones be your speedy guy with great hands. You got Anquan Boldin now they brought in, and he'll do the middle of the field. Yeah, he'll fill in that physical possession sort of role that Calvin had too.
Right, and then you know once Eric Ebron is fully recovered from his ankle thing, I mean he's going to be
That'll definitely help, and he's supposedly, by all accounts, had been like almost as you was hearing that proverbial light flipped on sort of thing for Ebron prior to his injury setback. So that'll be a question to see, you know, how he comes back from that and if he picks back up where he was with that hype in the preseason. So and don't forget about Golden Tate. I mean, Golden Tate was a solid number two to Calvin last couple years.
And you have the theoretic factor as a pass catching back and a running back. Amir Abdullah, he can catch passes too. So
I don't know how much they're going to throw to Amir, but he's.
But there's a lot of variables on that offense that can mitigate for the loss of Calvin. It's just scheme at this point. It's Stafford.
It's the line.
Because
they've been trying to do so many things. They've drafted a lot on the line in the last few years, and they're still looking for answers. They brought in Jeff Schwartz over the off season, and then they just cut him after they traded Jeremy Curley for an O-lineman that was recently drafted by San Francisco, but he had been hurt in all this. So they kind of seem like they're still searching it on the line to figure that whole thing out.
And it's getting late.
Yep. Oh, it's getting a little too late. Yeah. So, and the big issue for the Lions, and this, I don't need to tell this to Lions fans, but it's getting over the Lions, being the Lions. And I don't know that we'll ever see that. I'm too jaded as a Lions fan. I watched them for way too long at this point. I think, even if the offensive line does well, the offense is looking functional or better, the defense isn't quite as holy as maybe you would have thought. They're still the Lions, and they've just been remarkable at finding ways to lose over the years. So can they take any turn with that? It's tough to say with Jim Caldwell and all that. I don't know.
And finally, the Chicago Bears. One thing that has very much stood out to me during the preseason thus far is the offense being anemic, particularly the first-team offense. Jay Cutler, Alshon.
Yeah, it's
– Kevin White. It's been anemic.
Yeah, it's been bad.
And it's been bad. And, you know, I'm nervous about the Bears' ability to win games this year if that's what their offense is going to look like. I mean, if they can't drive the ball – with the first team offense to a scoring situation against vanilla defenses with their basic offensive scheming in place in the preseason, I don't know how they're going to do it on a consistent high level basis in the regular season. I just don't see it.
Well, yeah, I mean, at this point, John Fox has been around for a year and a half since they hired him. Ryan Pace has been in charge and has made a couple draft picks. And we haven't really seen either of those do anything yet because Kevin White missed all of last year.
Right.
I've heard zero buzz out of Leonard Floyd. I mean, I don't know. They're a work in progress.
Together all kinds of weird free agent signings.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. We keep saying like, oh, that guy's there. That guy's with the Bears now.
Jaquizz Rogers is there.
I think
Eddie Royal, Tony Moiaki, Rob Hausler.
Yeah, Deontay
Thompson.
They just have a collection of guys. Yeah, exactly. So like, they're a really big question mark to me. They look like, especially what we've seen in the preseason, that they look kind of like a mess right now. But, you know, just judging John Fox in his success, I mean, he hasn't been the most successful coach, but he hasn't been a dud either as a coach. He's had multiple stops. There's a reason he got there, you know, and you would expect that after a full year with him and all that, they should at least make an incremental step up. And
I've only seen steps backwards.
But that's what I'm saying.
And
is
all
that
I can do is trust my eyes at this point because we haven't had a regular season game played.
Right. But. So, like, I mean, again, the way this NFC North shakes out, hard to say. Green Bay probably will win. The rest of it, who knows? Because I can see the Lions doing well enough to actually make a move in the division, but I can also see them Lionsing their way to last place because I see that a million times. And the Bears are kind of a wild card just because are they as bad as they've looked, or should we expect them to take a step forward? And it's just a big question mark right now. But, yeah, based on the early returns, it looks like Chicago could be abysmal this year. But that would be surprising to me, just based on decent coaching that they have in place with, you know, especially with Fangio and John Fox, you know, because we've seen success out of these guys at other stops. You would expect that to take hold at some point. But who knows?
And next up, we're taking our topics over here to the AFC East. Let's start with the New England Patriots. As we all know, Tom Brady will be serving a 4-game suspension to start the season regarding that Deflategate nonsense that took up so much of our lives. people are really kind of focusing on that. What's going to happen in those 4 games with Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback? But this is something you and I have discussed. What I think is kind of a sneaky, advantageous thing. Tom Brady's got a month off.
Yeah.
He doesn't get to deal with the first quarter of the season. He gets to show up in the second quarter of the season fresh. Hasn't taken any sacks, hits, hurries, nothing.
I mean, if they lose.
And it's not like he's going to get rusty because he's Tom Brady.
Yeah. If they lose all 4 of the Garoppolo started games.
It's going to be trouble.
It's definitely
hard to get out of 0-4.
It's definitely a pit that'll be tough to dig out of. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, having a fresh Brady in December, I mean, that could be huge for them. You know, it's hard to say. And, like, of course, somehow, you know, they've been this, we'll say, model of success for the past 15 years or 20, not 20 years, but 15 plus years the Patriots have. But somehow they always end up with some way finding some way to put a chip on their shoulder.
Right.
And this will be another one.
Yeah,
you know? And,
exactly.
You know, Brady's going to come back madder than hell probably, you know. But at the same time, he might be a little rusty for a week just because it had been a while for him. But who knows? You know,
it's Tom Brady.
It's Tom Brady. It's all
It's not like he's getting a ton of reps in training
point.
Camp
yeah.
and stuff anyway. He knows what he needs to do.
Yeah, no, I think that, again, as long as they're not too – I mean, if they go 0-4, it's hard to say – if they'll be able to dig out of that. If they can win 1 or 2 of those games, I'm not worried about them at all.
The other thing, too, to keep in mind about the Patriots, and this is just what I've been seeing all summer long from beat writers and other members of the media that have been at Patriots training camps, is that this is probably one of their deepest rosters in terms of talent that they've had
mm-hmm.
in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Made a lot of cuts and additions over the course of the summer in the way that other teams have, that there's a lot of really talented guys that they're not going to be able to keep that other teams are going to want
mm-hmm.
as on their 53-man rosters. So I think that that's another thing to keep in mind is that when everybody's kind of concerned about this Brady suspension, they've got talent everywhere. They got
mm-hmm.
talent on the O-line, but they also got talent on the D-line. They've got talent at linebacker. They've got talent in the secondary. They got talent at tight end, wide receiver, and running back, and they have the depth. They have the talented depth
mm-hmm.
to support them should anybody, you know, get lost to injury or not pan out or whatever. So I think that's the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, this is a stacked team. And even when the Patriots haven't been quite as stacked across the board, they have still managed to go to Super Bowls or go to AFC championship games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to keep in mind is that this might be one of the most interesting, complex, and talented Patriots teams we've seen in a while.
Right. And so that furthers the point where, you know, Garoppolo just needs to not, you know, ruin it for everybody, for lack of a better phrase for that.
Sure.
But it's, you know, as long as he can do well enough and not single-handedly lose these games, they should at least be in them and have a chance to win any of those first four games.
Next up, the Miami Dolphins, where I have question marks regarding Ryan Tannehill that just won't go away. I've been watching him in the preseason. I'm not seeing anything that tells me that this guy is a long-term franchise quarterback for Miami. And the thing is, too, is that, you know, Adam Gase is being tasked really with turning this offense around and really making it the thing that everybody's kind of been sitting here waiting for the past 4 years. This is the Dolphins offense turning the corner this year. This is it. This is it. This is it. And now I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah.
About Ryan Tannehill. What I really like is Arian Foster. And if he can stay healthy, that's going to be really useful to them in both the passing and the run game. And he's a pretty good blocker, but
that's a huge if.
That's a big if. And I don't know. I just Tannehill. I don't even know who I feel comfortable comparing him to. But
because you see plenty out of him. You see plenty of
of
good stuff. But definitely, there's still so much bad stuff. It's just, you know, it's tough to rely on that, at least as far as what you're going to expect.
Right.
So, and that's obviously what we're talking about is expectations here. So, by all accounts, everybody seems to love Adam Gase, and they loved him beforehand, and there's still lots of praise coming
in
for him, which is good, and that's good for Miami, sure. And maybe that, you know, that could eventually get Tannehill to turn a corner to the point where we don't have questions about him anymore,
right.
You know, and maybe that if that happens, maybe just hasn't taken enough time to get there yet, you know, that's still possible. But I think this season actually will do a lot for us deciding on Ryan Tannehill, you know.
I think this is a pivotal year, mm-hmm, in terms of, okay, now we know who you are.
Right.
This is who you are.
Right.
We know your ceiling now.
I mean, granted, he's had a lot of turmoil with the organization since he's been there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's
so
always
much,
tough,
so
too.
Turnover,
so.
So much coaching and front office turnover, which never benefits the players in general,
no,
especially not a quarterback.
Right,
never does. I mean, look at Cleveland. Look all over the place.
But they got. But that's the thing, is you can't deny that they got a bunch of talent down there. They
no,
have,
of course not.
They've got some decent guys on the line. They've got, you know, like I said, if Arian Foster can stay healthy, he's obviously I would say he would be an upgrade over what you've seen out of the running game for years. They've got some good young receivers. Landry was amazing last year. What I expected, by the way, and obviously the defense, you know, with the kind of talent they have on the line there, you know, you'd expect them to put up a solid defensive effort, you know, week in, week out. So they it seems like it's all there on paper for them. You know
yes.
what I mean? But
also we've seen it be there on paper for them in previous years.
True, and so now you have this heralded coach come in, And maybe he can get things going. Maybe he can be the difference, or maybe he's just another guy that has that job. I don't know. And they're rather a question mark for me. I could see them doing pretty well this year, but I also could see them falling short, especially with the new coach and all that. It's tough to expect a ton in a new coach's first year.
Yeah.
But they do have plenty there, so we'll, you know, that'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, and especially we'll have to see what they do in the first 4 weeks of the season, because if the Dolphins can in some way get some significant separation from the Patriots, mm-hmm, if Garoppolo struggles and they do really well in the first 4 weeks, that could really change the dimension of the AFC East as the season wears on.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on now to the Buffalo Bills. Tyrod Taylor got a sort of long-term contract extension over the summer. There's a lot of pay-as-you-go and trigger dates and things that are not only tied to his performance and making sure that 2016 is as good as, if not better, than 2015, but also just in case there's a coaching or front office turnover at the end of the year, which you can never rule out when you're talking about Rex Ryan, especially now that he's brought on his brother Rob to coach the defense. Rob spent the last few years with the New Orleans Saints, and that defense was terrible. Rob says it was because he was forced let him do what he does best or whatever. But, you know, once you say something like that and then you end up with your brother in Buffalo, if it doesn't look pretty, people aren't going to say it was the Saints hindering you. It's you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Buffalo, I have a feeling they should be a little better. I think that they're poised for a run. They almost made the playoffs last year.
Yeah, they're very close.
I definitely like Tyrod and everything he brings. They've got a lot of other pieces around him that it's good to see. There's definitely plenty of guys on that defense. It's really, you know, can Rex get it all together? and get to the playoffs. And then if they do, what can they do there? And that's that'll be fun to watch. But I expect them to be a little bit better if they do take a step back. I mean, I could see that front office and head coaching turmoil in potentially falling out. But at the same time, I mean, he's still only been there, 2 years, 3 years now?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, I don't know. It just kills me how much happens after 2 years. People make changes because you just need to, especially with a guy that's had success being a head coach in the past. You know, that's the sort of thing you should let it marinate for a while before you make any rash changes, I think. But at the same time, with Rex, I think a lot of it extends beyond on-field performance. It's like how he deals with...
He has the ability to wear out his welcome. Just personality-wise. And when you have him there with his brother,
mm-hmm.
who knows?
Exactly.
And finally, the New York Jets, they also solved their quarterback situation by bringing back Ryan Fitzpatrick for probably what is the last season for him to be starting there. That's good news because everything else about the quarterback situation for the Jets has been kind of a major question mark. You know, Geno Smith was sort of penciled in as the number one while they were waiting to get everything done with Fitzpatrick. But since then, he's kind of dropped down the depth chart. He's not the number two anymore. There was some talk of maybe he'd get cut or maybe they'd explore a trade. Now that he's not playing in the fourth preseason game, it looks like his roster spot is safe for the Jets because they're not trying to put any more action of him on tape. Mm-hmm. So I think that bodes well for his ability to stick around there. But they have to decide what to do with their other quarterbacks. I mean, they have Bryce Petty there. They have Christian Hackenberg, and it's possible, it's looking more and more possible as the days go by, that they're going to keep all four on that 53-man roster. And when you're rostering up four quarterbacks on a 53-man roster, that takes away from your depth at other positions. And where are they going to sacrifice in order to keep four quarterbacks on the roster? Because that might come to bite them.
Sure.
As the season wears on. I mean, maybe you want a little bit more D-line depth.
Well, it seems odd because you're keeping four quarterbacks, and it's like Ryan Fitzpatrick, who you didn't want to pay until you had to, and he was the one that made the offense hum last year. And beyond him, you got Geno, who, you know, we've seen him have his chance, and he didn't do anything with it. Will he ever be able to do anything? It's hard to say, you know, and it doesn't look likely. And then you have two guys that are completely unproven. So you have like basically three guys that you don't want to put in the game on your active roster. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. But
I guess, I think part of the fear, though, is if they waive either or both of Hackenberg and Petty, they'll lose them both and won't be able to stash them on the practice squad. I think that's what the motivating factor here. But to quote Mike Tomlin, you can't live in your fears.
Yeah.
You just got to do what's best for the team.
I kind of feel like this team could – because one thing I will say about the Jets, I really like Todd Bowles. I think
Todd Bowles is great.
He's been awesome since he came there, and he's just shown to be a really good head coach. And in a number of ways, I can't even think of half of them to list them for you. But I definitely respect everything he's done there. My main questions are what's going on with the GM. And, I mean, I could even see them moving on, making a move at GM and keeping Todd Bowles around.
That wouldn't surprise me.
After this year, depending on how certain things shake out. But, yeah, there's been a lot of questionable front office decisions on this team. But I certainly don't have any issue with Todd Bowles. And obviously they have a ton of talent on that team. So
especially, you know, there's a lot of talent on that defense, too.
Yeah. Exactly.
They're shutting things down. The defense is shutting down opposing offenses. The defense is laying down some hard hits. The defense is playing motivated, and there's so much talent there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the other thing to consider too is, even if Fitzpatrick does kind of have a step back in his performance, you know, with his connection with Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, is that you can do a lot leaning on a defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ask the Denver Broncos how much you can do leaning on a defense. You know what I'm saying? So that's just something to keep in mind, too, is that the Jets don't necessarily need to light up the world on offense. If they're just serviceable, they're good or efficient, that can be all you need when you have a top-tier defense in order to find yourself maybe atop the AFC East or a wild card playoff team.
Yeah, so to wrap up, AFC East is an interesting division because – I think there's the Patriots who've been the class of that division for, like we said, 15, 20 years now.
An entire generation has
and they have
experienced only the Patriots leading that division.
Right. And their biggest question mark is how well do they get through the first 4 weeks? Because after that, there's no questions.
Right.
So, and then the other three teams have some questions, but there's also a lot there, a lot of talent. And, like, I kind of see them, it's almost like instead of 1-2-3-4, it's kind of like 1-2-2-2, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they're all kind of right there. So it should be a very competitive division. It should be fun to watch them play this year.
I think to me what really is going to hinge on it is that first 4 weeks. What all four of these AFC East teams' records are when Tom Brady comes back from the suspension, because that will give you at least a little glimpse into what all these teams need to do in the final three quarters of the season, you know, and what is the lay of the land?
I mean, I'm a fan of not doing much assessment until after the first quarter of the season goes by anyway.
Right. But now when you throw the wrench of the Brady suspension in there, then that makes things a little bit more interesting. Well, we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and we're going to send you all home for the week.
All right.
So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Gotta collect call. They done locked up my boat. Low blow. Hit me in the left ventral hole. We won't be able to ride out to 2004. But not for long, because we got a better sack to serve. Trying to take your other people for your rims. Hit the curb for your swerving, but you go ahead. More head for me while you ride to the beat. Draw like tears, like for fears. You know, shout, let it all out just for my peers. And pupils who feel like it's time to unwind like December 31st, 1999. And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Just back, just for a couple minutes, just to say goodbye for the week. thank you, everyone, for joining us this week's adventure. We'll be back probably next Tuesday, and then we'll go back to our regular Wednesday in-season schedule beginning week two of the regular season. And until we meet again, good luck, Teddy Bridgewater. I'm rooting for you.
Yeah, hopefully there's good news out of that. Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm sitting here, like, I keep looking at my phone. I'm like,
hoping
is
for
there
an update
any new
that
news?
It was
is there any update?
Right.
I'm nervous about it.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll know by the time we come back to the show next week, and we can talk about how miserable this is yet again. And until then, I'm your host of the F-Ball NFL Podcast, Andrea Hengst. I cover the NFL for thecomeback.com and sportsonearth.com and the Cleveland Browns for the Orange and Brown Report at scout.com. You can also find me on Twitter at fball_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea. And I'll also be joining Will Leach from Sports on Earth on his podcast this week to do a comprehensive preview of the entire AFC. So look for that in the coming days, sometime later in the week.
Nice.
Yeah.
And again, I'm Brian. I'm the co-host of this podcast, as well as the, what am I going to call me today? Technical producer.
Technical producer. Executive technical producer.
And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right, guys. Cut down days. Not too long from now, a lot of really talented football players will unfortunately be without jobs. But it also is a sign that the regular season is just around the corner. So hopefully between now and then, no more significant injuries, no more setbacks for guys who are trying to come back from their injuries. Let's just move forward. Let's make it clean until we get to week one at least.
I mean, there is one more, the last week of preseason.
Yeah, we're not going to see any starters.
We're not going to see any starters, but like, God, how bad do you feel for anybody that gets hurt in a fourth preseason game?
Terrible.
You know what I mean?
they're trying to
get a job either there or somewhere else.
Yes.
And then you get hurt and nobody's going to call you. So,
it's terrible.
Know, let's feel bad for those guys, too.
Feel bad for those guys, too, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next week here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Later.
Peace.